You've been there so long, you start cleaning the room yourself before housekeeping gets there, so they don't judge you.
Welcome to the Denim Dads podcast, the show where we talk about denim, parenting, and things that come in pods. I am Paul, and you can find me on Instagram at Instagram, and then you put a .com on there, and then after that, it's Cuff Check Denim. That's how you find me on Instagram. I'm a dad of three, and I live outside of Milwaukee.
I'm a Lono. I have three kids. You can find me on Instagram @_dad_chic. Can you get to Instagram with a .com? It doesn't really work on a browser.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah,
if you have a corporate account, which I guess you would at this point because you big time. But
no, you can browse Instagram. You can just Instagram.com and you can open it up in a browser. It's very limited what you can do. But you can see stuff and you can log in. It's a total pain. They've like obviously made it to work in the app and nowhere else. But sometimes if I just get tired of looking at my phone, I'll just pull it up or if I'm doing messages and I'm working on my computer and I don't want to pull out my phone while I'm doing something on my computer, I can just pop it up and it's good for typing a lot.
Maybe I'll try it again. I remember trying it a long time ago because I, like a lot of middle-aged old people, I do a lot of work on an actual computer. It'd be nice not to have my phone out if I wanted to use Instagram.
Use my phone less, it's amazing the hobby I've carved out for myself because I really wish I was on my phone less. But then what would I do with myself?
I don't know. Spend time with your kids or finding things that fit in pods so we could talk about them here.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, or at least cast them somewhere.
All right. So, listener, it's just the two of us today, so we'll see how it goes. I am wearing the new Lilac 316 flannel. It's a really light textured flannel. It's a really good spring shirt. Really happy with it. I'm down to like two pieces of clothing a year, which is a healthy amount of purchases. So this one made the cut. I'm excited about it. And I'm wearing my secret denim, which I think is like four episodes in a row because it's fade season for 20-ounce denim. And then I'm wearing the Common Projects suede Chelsea boots, which I really like. I think they have a really good silhouette, and they're very close to like the perfect Chelsea for me. So I don't wear them a lot because I'm terrified of suede. That's why I gravitate towards a rough out. But these are suede, so I'll just be avoiding puddles today.
That's fair. You know, this is the fourth time, I think, in a row that you've worn your secret denim, but the first time that you haven't said something bad about them. So I think we're moving in the right direction with the secret denim.
No, I still don't like them, but I owned them and they were expensive, so they're getting worn.
I just, I don't wear mine as much as I used to, but it's mostly because I have them in a slim fit and I'm just wearing wider fits now. And I still like them. I like the feel. And you're right about the cuts. There's just something about the way that they do the crotches that just is weird. But can't beat that denim. It's so good. So today I'm not wearing secret denim. I actually was wearing some new pants that I got at a store. This is going to be on the theme of our episode, but had kind of a long stay in a hotel and visited a store in Oklahoma City called Brass Tacks. And Brass Tacks, shout out to Mitchell, who's opening it and running the thing. And I got to meet him, great guy. But I bought a pair of Stan Ray just fatigue pants. They're kind of, they had a kind of a tapered fatigue, and then they had like a wide leg, kind of straight leg fatigue. And I got the straight leg, and the fit is just great. They're 100% cotton, but it's got kind of like a, it has some flex to it, but it's all 100% cotton. So it's in the weave. I really like it. And I was wearing some new boots. They're from actually an Indian company, which is kind of a new thing, but they sent them over to me to check out, and I really like them. They're made out of buffalo leather, and the company is called Craft and Lore, and there's some black monkey boots, and I really like them. They're like kind of in the $200 range, and for $200 boots, they are like seriously built boots. So like those quite a bit, and they're black, And so I was wearing my black Westhoffen Works flannel, which is like a ultra heavy flannel. It's 13 ounces and it snaps. It's really great. They're out of Switzerland, and they make them in Italy, but it's the company's based out of Switzerland, which borders Italy, of course. But it's good kind of spring wear. The pants are loose and light, and they'll be great in the summer. But the flannel is for real, and it keeps you really warm. And
I'm over here.
that was my look
Oh,
for the
go.
day.
Nice. Yeah, and you were just stuck in a hotel for a long time, which can be
Yes.
suboptimal.
Yeah, it was 5 nights, which is just kind of that's a long hotel stay when you're by yourself and you're not with your family doing stuff. So yeah, 5 nights in a hotel, and it was good. I got comfortable. I got to know the hotel. I kind of spent some time introducing myself and finding places to sit, getting comfortable, reading, watching movies, other things like that. I spent a lot of time out of the hotel room too, of course, but yeah, 5 nights is kind of a long time for a hotel stay.
Yeah, you can get to the point where like you're eating your fourth dinner in a row by yourself in the hotel and you feel like the staff are judging you.
Yeah, and especially if like you won't let housekeeping in, and so the plates are just stacking up, and
Oh yeah.
it's just feels like kind of the third act of a sad movie.
You've been there so long, you start cleaning the room yourself before housekeeping gets there so they don't judge
Totally, totally.
All right, listener. So yeah, we're talking about long hotel stays today. I have a bunch of them. I'm gonna try to not talk about all of them, but I guess I'll start with a compare and contrast. So when I moved to Hawaii, it was like end of COVID, everything was still shut down. And in Hawaii, all the hotels are in the Waikiki area, like literally 95% of them. And there's a strip on the beach that's all like high-end resorts. And then you go a couple of blocks in, and it gets more affordable and more sketchy. And I was there with two kids and a pregnant wife, and we needed some space because we're going to the hotel for about a month. So we stayed in a local hotel that was big. The room was big, but it was like a two-bedroom suite. But you paid for everything else because it was like there was no concierge, housekeeping was limited. For like 3 days, there was no hot water, there was no room service.
Oof.
It was rough, but we had to do that to make the budget work. And then because it was a few blocks back in Waikiki, like it was kind of, I wouldn't say dangerous at night, but it was a little sketchy at night, particularly with small children. So it was like once we got back to the room for the night, we were done. So like it was not the best month of our lives. It was very stressful. But when we moved to Singapore, in Asia, there's this concept of a serviced apartment. So it's a hotel that's also an apartment. So it's like a full-size, like apartment. You don't have all the hotel services. You have limited housekeeping again, but it's arranged so you like feel like you're going home. It's furnished like a house is furnished instead of like the transient space of a hotel room. It
A
was just a
kitchen?
lot. Yeah, I had a full kitchen, not like a
Wow,
kitchenette,
that's
but a
nice.
full kitchen. Yeah, and it was great. And they're common in Asia. I've stayed in them other places too. But I don't know why that model doesn't exist in the US. If they're more, it's just, I don't know. I feel like there's an opening there and it bothers me. But so if you're gonna do a long stay.
There is the kind of extended stay kind of hotel, and some of them will have like almost working kitchens. Like they may not have a stove because like the likelihood that somebody would use that and then burn the place down is probably too high for them. But like use it to cook drugs or something like that. But just because welcome to America. But
Yeah.
it does seem that like they could do something like that in an extended stay, because I mean if you're going to be in an extended stay hotel, which at least my stays were not, my long hotel stays have not been in extended stay hotels. You would think, yeah, just a stove and an oven would be really great, because then you could like buy a lasagna and put it in there. Just like go to the store and get some like take and bake food and you'd be good. But yeah, they don't do that too much here.
Yeah, I think the problem with extended stay in the US, this is going to sound so elitist, but they're priced really low. It's not for like people that are moving and travelers that need a place for a month. It's for people that can't afford a house that are there for a long time. And because of that, it tends to bring in I mean, to be frank, like the drug making crowd.
Right. Yes.
And
yeah.
I,
the idea is good. It's like, you know, I moved and I don't have my house for a couple of weeks and I don't want to stay in a hotel room. So I'm going to stay in an extended stay place and they'll charge by the week. And that's great. But that and the sort of like flop house have kind of merged in the last few years. And it does seem to be that kind of crowd.
Yeah. I was in an extended stay in Texas a long time ago, like maybe 12, 13 years ago. And it was so scary. I just went and stayed with a friend. Like I was waiting to close. I was waiting to close on a house and I just left. I was like, no, this isn't going to work. Like I'm going to get knifed in this parking lot. And
yeah, depending on the town in Texas, there's I had a friend who worked in commercial real estate in Dallas, and he was trying to close a deal on an extended stay hotel that he was trying to purchase and clean up. And as he was inspecting the place to like close the deal, the pimp who ran the prostitution operation on the bottom floor came and talked to him and had a heart to heart with him. And he was like, look, I don't know what we're doing here, but you know, we're not going to be able to allow you to continue running your business if you're going to be here. And he was a little concerned for his life after he had that conversation.
That tracks.
Yeah. He told me this and I was like, wow, you live a very interesting life in commercial real estate. I thought it was all, you know, bank deals and high dollar operations, but no, there's pimps involved. So how long was that stay, the Hawaii hotel stay?
It was about a month.
A month. Yeah, okay. That's about what I've got. I've got two different month long hotel stays. And one was a little sketchy and one was very much not sketchy. The sketchier one was, so this is like right after I graduated college, I was going through like an onboarding for this kind of national company that I was working for. And they flew everybody, they were based out of Orlando, but they flew everybody to Daytona and Daytona, Florida, Daytona Beach, Florida, and put us all up in a hotel for the month of training that we had to go through. And we were in this hotel called the Diplomat, which is basically a huge kind of spring break hotel. And we were not there during spring break. So it was kind of a ghost town. This was January and we were there for a solid month.
I know this hotel. I used to go to Daytona all the time.
Yeah. Oh, really? Nice.
I've never stayed here, but I've seen it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's for real. And it's, and you know, it's right on the beach. That was great. But it was just, you know, it was just a no frills spring break hotel that I was staying in for an entire month. And they made meals for us and stuff like that in kind of the area downstairs. So we weren't like, you know, eating restaurant food three meals a day, which would have been killer, but it was not great. But the great one was, as I was in grad school, I was on a research trip to Athens, Greece. And you know, I used to live there, but this was a return after we lived there. And I was doing manuscript research. We were digitizing manuscripts in the National Library, and the guy, the kind of chief researcher for this project, really didn't like staying in bad hotels, and so he raised enough money for everybody to stay in the Athens Hilton for the month that we were there, and it was amazing. You know, staying in the Athens Hilton is tough to beat. It's one of the more, if you're paying in Hilton points, it's one of the more expensive Hiltons to stay in, one of the most costly by points. And it was really, really nice. They had a happy hour every day from 4 to 6 on the top floor. And we would just go up there and we'd basically eat dinner. They had, you know, meats and other sort of Greek delicacies, and you could have an ouzo or a glass of wine. It was glorious. That was a fantastic 1 month stay in Athens. Can't beat it. And beautiful view of the Acropolis. It was tough to beat.
It's always nice when someone else's high tastes end up paying off for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Lono, what are some of your tips if you're staying for a long time in a hotel? What are some of the tips that you would give people? Because, you know, you and I both do travel a lot. I think you travel quite a bit more than I do. And certainly higher on the hog, I think, just because, you know, academia humanities academia. You know, they're they're just rolling in it these days. But all the same, you know, I'm kind of in it for the travel. So I'm interested in some of your tips for long hotel stays.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of quality of life ones. The first one is to completely 100% unpack immediately. Like, you're gonna be really tired and burn out, but everything out of the suitcases, hide the suitcases. Because whenever you wake up from your, you know, your terrible 4 to 6 hour sleep after you've landed, you can just start like you're there. You're settled, you've moved in, like you're in the hotel, that's just your life now.
Like, yes.
And then I also try, especially if it's in the US where I understand how grocery stores work, I try to go buy like food. I know a lot of hotels don't have like a kitchen, but if they have a little mini fridge and a microwave, and you can buy some fruit, you can buy some cereal, like things that are like affordable and not like loaded with MSG and grease. So you can get quick meals when you're tired that will not make you feel like you're going to die afterwards. Like,
that is the big thing when you're staying at a hotel. Like, you know, restaurant food's great, but it's like extra salt, sometimes MSG, and like extra fat. And it's, I mean, it's delicious, but you eat that 3 times a day and you're going to die.
Yeah. So I almost always unpack and buy food and then collapse. Those are the two things I do on arrival.
Yeah, my big tip, the one that I've come away with is same as yours, but it's fruit. Either buy fruit or pack fruit. If you're not doing an international travel and you can bring fruit across whatever border you're going to or wherever you're going, just bring it in the bag. Because I found that there's been times where I've been staying for a conference and I'll be, you know, 5 days in a hotel. And I remember I was staying at a conference in downtown San Antonio and I went on a hero's quest for an apple. And I remember it was like 2 in the morning and I'd like not had a piece of fruit or anything for like days. And I was like, I've got to have fruit before I go to bed tonight, or I'm just going to implode. And I remember walking in, now maybe doing this at 2 a.m. wasn't the best idea. Maybe it was 10 p.m., but I walked into a Walgreens and I thought they'll have something. I was expecting like, you know, like a $10 apple next to a, you know, $16 banana right at the front desk. And I asked them, I said, do you guys have fruit? And they laughed at me. They just laughed at me. And then I walked out without fruit.
It was just horrible. Drugs and candy. That's all you need to get through the day.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just started packing like a bag of apples. Just like go to the store, get a bag of Honeycrisp apples. They'll stay good. Put them in your bag and you'll have them just when you need them. And that's really important for me, is just to have something that feels like healthy food.
Yeah, that's smart. I'll do the fruit. I'll do a box of decent cereal and like some skim milk and usually some protein bars and good coffee. That's yes. Like my grocery run.
Yes. Yeah. Protein bars is my other one. Protein bars and almonds. I usually get these like wasabi soy almonds.
Oh,
and
those are so good.
Oh, they're amazing.
Like I go through like a box of those a week.
Yes.
It's one of my go-to snacks just in general.
Those man. So good. And it can like, I mean, that and an apple can get you through a meal that you don't eat otherwise. It's like, I'm skipping lunch. I'm having a handful of these, maybe 2 handfuls, and then an apple, and you're good to go. Get a big glass of water and just go tackle the day.
Okay. So that's smart. I've got more tips if you want to stay on this or.
Yeah. I'm happy to hear more tips. I need to know these things.
I think it's, so when you're traveling internationally, you're almost always going to have breakfast included. But if not, just pay for the breakfast. It's less of a thing in the US where the continental breakfast has kind of died. But overseas, like both in Asia and Europe, the breakfast is usually really good. And it's usually moderately healthy. And it's also usually, a buffet, a continental. Mm-hmm. So you can just load up on extra fruits and breads, especially in Europe. I don't travel in Europe a lot. But no matter where you are, the like bread, cheese, meat spread in the morning is incredible.
Oh, and, yeah.
Maybe the upcharge on the hotel is $11 a day or something for breakfast. But, you know, buying food that's clean and healthy in Asia or just food in general in Europe is going to be way more expensive than that. And you can usually turn the included breakfast into 2 meals.
So absolutely.
Always pay for the breakfast out of the U.S. The U.S. is different. It's going to be like bad pancakes and boxed frosted flakes, which is fine if it's free.
I don't know why we can't get this right though. There's, you know, like that in Europe, you know, it's like cold cuts, but they're like nice. They're like nice, you know, charcuterie quality cold cuts. And it's like bread, but it's like delicious, well-made bread. And it's like, we would have almost the same thing, but it's like sad waffles and a broken waffle maker. If it's a fancy place. And then, and like, you know, the worst kind of meat you could possibly imagine. You know, it's like paper thin bacon that's just like swimming in grease or something like that, or sausage that's like half made out of paper. And I don't understand why we can't get this right in America. Because I stayed one time for like 2 days. I was at a conference. I was in Hamburg, Germany. I remember it, the hotel was not nice. I mean, like the room that I was in was not nice. It was like a twin size bed stuck up against the wall. It was more like a dormitory. But you went downstairs and you got breakfast, and they had all sorts of interesting coffees. You could make espressos, and then they had croissants that were like real butter croissants. You know, it's like European croissants. And I remember they had, you know, all the different meats that they'll often serve in these kinds of things, like, you know, just cold cut kind of things, sliced meats. And then they had smoked salmon on the other side. It's like, you're giving me smoked salmon. It's like one of my favorite things in the world. And, you know, it wasn't like amazing smoked salmon, but also we're in Hamburg, we're on the North Sea. There's like, you know, they probably caught it there. So it's like, you know, that was amazing. And it didn't cost anything extra. And I think I paid something like 55 euros a night for that place. It was, you know, like, come on, America, we can do better.
Yeah, I went to Mainz when my grandmother got sick with my mom, kind of just there to help my mom because she's old. And we stayed in some budget hotel in Mainz, Germany, which is not, you know, a tourist hotspot. You can go see the printing press, and that's everything. But and it was a budget hotel, like it was cheap. And the brochen was like a 9 to 10, like the bread. It was so good. And then the meats and the jellies and the jams. Every breakfast was better than literally any hotel breakfast I've ever had in the U.S. And it was bottom tier German hotel. The room was teeny. The bed was like 6 inches wide. But the food...
That's it.
Yes.
So long hotel stay tips. Lono's long hotel stay tips. Go to a bad hotel in Germany.
Yeah.
That's
rearrange your trip to Germany.
Yes. Just like whatever it is that you're doing, have a stopover in Germany, load up on the brochen. So in this conversation, we've been kind of talking about hotel trips, but like really the question that we've been talking about is like, what do you do when you're in a hotel? But what a lot of people do is they'll stay in an Airbnb. And so I wanted to kind of pose the question to us of, if you have a long hotel stay, do you go with the hotel or do you just say, forget it, I'm going to go with the Airbnb. They'll have a kitchen. They'll have a refrigerator. They might even have a washer dryer. And so I can like handle these things that would otherwise be a little bit more difficult in a hotel. And I'll just say, you know, my typical approach to these sort of things, especially if I'm going overseas, is to go Airbnb if I have the chance. Now, Airbnb, there's been problems over the years. You know, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. And sometimes you get one and it's like the pictures match everything, but then, you know, you just realize that those pictures might have been a little bit blurry and there's like, you know, cracks in the walls and everything's dirty. But all the same, when I'm on a long stay, and especially if I'm traveling with my family, I prefer to go an Airbnb. And part of the reason for that is that our kids can stay in a separate room. That's just, you know, you're going to be there for a while. You really want to not put your kids to sleep and then just like lay down in bed quietly and have to fall asleep at 8 o'clock. You want to be able to like move on with your life and like crack open a bottle of wine and like chat, sit out on a balcony. And oftentimes your Airbnb is going to have something like that. But in a hotel, it's a little harder to come by. So when I have the choice, and I don't always, but I will stay in an Airbnb over a long hotel stay, especially if I'm going more than about 4 days.
I think there's definitely advantages. Especially the extra rooms, which is why whenever I stay in an Airbnb, it's specifically for the extra rooms. But I usually will gravitate towards a hotel over an Airbnb, all things being equal, for a couple of different reasons. One is the last tip I was going to give. I'm going to double down on it. This especially goes for work tips, but it's a reason against Airbnb is like pick a hotel alliance and stick with it if someone else is paying. Because then you get family trips paid for by whatever work trips you did, right? It's going to be about a 10 to 1. I do Marriott. I get all sorts of free Marriott trips with my family because I always stay Marriott for work. So that's I'm just throwing that in there real quick. It doesn't have to be Marriott. I don't care which alliance you use, but let listener know that. But all right, so Airbnb v. hotel. I actually, the only place where I disagree with you is overseas. I avoid Airbnbs because you don't know where you're going to be. You don't know the city you're in. Like if you do a big hotel chain, you're going to be in some place like where a foreigner wants to be. An Airbnb, you might be like, Lord knows. And then you're like explaining to a taxi driver that only speaks Thai, like where to come get you. And it's just, you don't have a concierge to help you sort stuff out. Like, so unless it's a city or country that you really, truly know, I would really stay away from Airbnb internationally. And I know you're an academic, so you go to places where you're like the literal expert. But listener, you know, he's like one guy who lives. I don't remember if we decided where he lives, but he lives somewhere in the U.S. He's probably never experienced the world. Don't listener, don't do an Airbnb overseas. You'll get in trouble.
Unless it's a place I do have a story about this. So this is pre Airbnb, but it's kind of like an Airbnb sort of situation. So when we were moving over to Greece, we had a stop. We flew like cheap airlines. We kind of got a transatlantic flight and then kind of hopped over on cheap European airlines. And at the time, this was 2007. At the time, it was like, you know, like Ryanair and EasyJet and SkyJet. And there was like all these cheap airlines. I mean, they're still there, but they've had to come up on their prices a little bit. But you could get like 29 euro flights to just about anywhere. And so I remember in order to get ourselves to Athens, we had like a week from when we left to when we needed to get there. So we were mostly stopping off in Croatia because it was easy to get there by cheap airlines. And once you got there, the places to stay were really cheap. And one of the things that we had heard is, this is, you know, 2007. It's not too far after the Serbo-Croat War, not too long after this, but we had, and the fall of communism, et cetera. And we had heard that there was a kind of like post-communist situation that was still going on there with regard to how people would rent out guest rooms. And it was that you would just go to like the main square of the town in whatever town you were in, and there would be all these pensioners that would be there, and they would hold up pictures of their house and the room that you would stay in. And you would negotiate a price. And then once you agreed, then they would take you to the place. So we had an extra night in Split, Croatia, which is right there on the coast. It's on the Adriatic Sea. It's beautiful. And Diocletian's palace is there. We had a night, we had like two or three nights in Diocletian's palace, but we had an extra night. And we said, we're going to stay with a pensioner. And so we went down to the square. We like pulled in our really, really messed up rental car, parked it in the place, turned it in, and then just turned around and found some random lady. And she flagged somebody down to give us a ride to her house. And, you know, the rooms looked nice enough. The price was great. And then we drove really, really deep into Split, way far away from the sea, and into these like literally like concrete block, 25 story high, Soviet style, you know, brutalist building. She took us up a very scary elevator. And then we like went into the room and locked the doors and watched Locked Up on the Nat Geo channel or MTV Europe or something like that for the next like 5 hours. And the only food we could get, there was, you know, because everybody just makes their own food, there was a supermarket nearby, but we weren't going to be using her kitchen and she wasn't offering us dinner. So we went down to a 7-Eleven that was downstairs in Croatia, Croatian 7-Eleven, and got slices of pizza from the 7-Eleven. I brought them up and that was it. And it was a pretty wild Airbnb-esque experience for us.
So we were we have almost the same story. We were moving from Singapore back to the U.S. and we had a long layover in Korea. It was originally just gonna be a normal layover, but we extended it out a couple of days to break up the flight. And we didn't know anything about Korea. We'd never been there, and we booked like one of these like in between hotel Airbnb places that's like on hotels.com where you don't know what it really is. It was in Incheon. It was big. It had multiple rooms. And like, oh, this would be great. Like, you know, Seoul Incheon Airport. You know, see Seoul. Well, Incheon is not Seoul. It's like an hour away. And there was, look, have nothing against like the food that Koreans eat. Like Korean food I normally like, but Korean food that doesn't have a Western slant, that's aimed at like industrial Koreans, which is what Incheon is. It's a Korean industrial town. It's all like fish head soup. Like, all the menus are in Korean, and it's just like pictures of like things that don't look appetizing to me, and my, especially not to my children. So the only food we could find was 7-Eleven, like in Incheon. So 7-Eleven, feeding Americans in Croatia and Korea. That should be their motto.
It really should be. That's it's like that in big gulps, and you're good.
But yeah, all right, it's a good chat. You were right, Paul. You told me I spend a lot of time in hotels. I do. I rely on them so much, I've actually become quite independent.
Oh goodness, that was really something, Lono. Well, that was good chat, and I feel like I learned something about hotels. And who knows? Maybe I'll start getting my Marriott rewards coming in.
Nice, you should.
All right, take care, Lono.
You too, man. Good chat.
All right, later.